What happens after we unlock your terminals? She asked him. Are you staying here? What happens, Ryan said, standing and ready to get this over with, is we access his terminals and then our deal is done.
That is correct,
Spark said, still completely focused on the ship. Grab your packs, Ryan told them, picking up hers from the ground where she left it. And where the hell is Ram? As she slipped her arms through the straps of her bag, a single line of hard light began eating up Ace's cargo doorway until nothing remained but the impressions in the dirt. Her ship was completely hidden, door and all. Spark still hadn't moved.
Ah, there you are, he said in a near whisper, sounding pleased with himself.
Dread slid down Ryan's spine. Now what? Chapter 44. Facility at Voi, Kenya, Africa, Earth. All in all, Annabelle was somewhat content to have a few precious minutes to herself in her office. Not that it would last, of course. As director, something always came along to disrupt the day. The Bad Moon Rising and the Torquato had touched down on the tarmac 20 minutes ago. Dr. Iqbal and his team were now waiting in the perimeter to escort the secure data core to its permanent containment facility, deep underground, all of which would take some time, as strict security protocols must be followed. Captain Hollier, the AR team and Fire Team Apollo, along with Captain Kara and Agent Khan, had gone to debriefing in Hangar 1, where they'd be interviewed by Ferguson, the facility AI. And better Ferg than Annabelle, that was for damn sure. Just thinking about the fiasco on Binturl stuck like an angry thorn in her side, and she wasn't quite sure she'd remain composed when it came to that line of questioning. After refilling her coffee mug, she slid into her desk chair to watch the video feed they'd acquired from the AR team and Fire Team Apollo of the meetup at Binturl. Ferg had just completed compiling the feed and cleaning up a large amount of distortion caused by the brawl. When Thea learned Ferg had had no problems cleaning up the footage, she'd submitted herself for review, convinced something was wrong. After granting Thea's request, Annabelle had sent Ferguson on to debriefing. Now she settled in to watch the scene at Port Joy Square unfold. She'd expected to see a motley salvage crew, dirty and foul. Instead, she saw a tall, dark-haired woman armed like an insurrectionist, and two young crew members who appeared to be in their late teens or early 20s. Thanks to the feed worn by the Apollo team leader, Annabelle was able to listen to the exchange, and she watched with interest the box that the captain had handed over, containing the data core and guilty Spark. And then the firefight had ensued, which Annabelle had to admit was clever. Captain Forge had certainly covered her bases and created an inventive escape plan. Getting shot clean through by Needler hadn't been in the cards, but Apollo's team leader had acted quickly. Unfortunately, they hadn't been able to apprehend the salvagers as planned. Then the mysterious gray blur streaked into view. Annabelle rewound the feed and watched again. Chills covered her arms. She slowed the feed. It couldn't be. Goosebumps spread like wildfire over her skin as she watched the footage again, this time slowing the speed even more. There. She paused on the moment the blur grabbed Ryan Forge out of the air. And she knew exactly what she was looking at. The fact that a Forerunner armiger had suddenly appeared like the cavalry was an intense shock. The last time she'd seen one had been in video footage during her time on the Ark. She'd been fortunate enough to be safe inside the mayhem at the time, but even on screen, the armigers on the Ark surface had been sentient, deadly and menacing in appearance, with their floating parts and glowing eyes. What in the hell was an ancient Forerunner armiger doing on Binturl? And, more importantly, why was it rescuing Ryan Forge of all people? Wait. Annabelle leaned in close to the screen and magnified several more times. The armiger wore an Ace of Spades insignia on its shoulder. Dread thrummed beneath her skin, cold and electric. Oh, God. No.
Radine!
The aide appeared almost instantly at her door as she hurried around her desk.
Tell them to stop containment! Don't let that data core into the facility! Go! Ferg!
She ran down the hall and hurried into the elevator, heart pounding. Ferg hadn't responded. Annabelle had been racking her brain all this time, trying to figure out how two advanced Oni prowlers had failed to secure a civilian Mariner-class ship. Now she damn well knew. Monitors could control armatures. 343 Guilty Spark wasn't just a damaged construct trapped in a data core. He was in league with the salvagers, which meant he was free and operational. And none of this was an accident. Annabelle's instincts were screaming, the awful realization eating at her insides as she paced the elevator, urging it to move faster.
Annabelle, what the hell is going on? Dr. Iqbal's voice came over comms. The fragment is still secure in the Prowler's containment pod.
Ferg! She shouted as the elevator doors opened, breaking out at a dead run across the tarmac. Initiate facility-wide shutdown! Now!
It was all clicking neatly into place. It wasn't the physical data core she was worried about. It was the brief moments during which the data core hadn't been contained, when Ryan Forge had tossed it to Agent Han, when the team had scanned it and bagged it. Only a few seconds. That's all the time it had needed. Jesus. Guilty Spark could have invaded their comms and units before the fighting on Bintoral even erupted. As she approached the hangar bays, where the debriefings were being held, she came to a halt as all the power began to shut off. The bay doors closed.
Radine, who's initiating shutdown? Is it Ferg?
Director, Radine said with deadly calm that shook her to her core. I'm in your office. It's the video feed. The image. It's corrupted. It's streaming code. It's...
The comms went dead. And Ferguson had cleaned up the video. Ferg, who wasn't answering. It was in the video feed, and now it was in Ferg.
God damn it!
She saw Dr. Iqbal hurrying out of the Bad Moon Rising, looking frazzled and confused. The tarmac was in a state of confusion and chaos as a ground shuttle lost power and ran up the edge of a Pelican's open cargo ramp, flipping over while a heavy drone fell from the sky and slammed into the edge of the tarmac and exploded. And Annabelle saw it all through a slow-motion lens of reaction and realization. There was nothing wrong with Thea. They'd all been played. 343 Guilty Spark and the crew of the Ace of Spades were working together. God only knew what the monitor had promised them.
Idiots!
Idiots who were in league with one of the most formidable and unstable assets in the galaxy, one that had now compromised her facility and had her entire team locked in that hangar. Chapter 45. Mount Kilimanjaro, Tanzania, Africa, Earth. Once Spark was finished communicating with the Ace of Spades, he blinked, turned around, and stared at Ryan with a tilt to his head. The blue lines on his faceplate seemed to soften somewhat. If she had to guess, she'd say he was suddenly happy and eager to get started.
What were you looking for? She asked him. An old friend.
He walked past her without elaborating. Ryan sighed and then rounded up the crew.
All right, people, we're headed out. And where the hell is Ram?
They found him on the ravine, on his knees with a handful of dirt. Ryan paused and gave him his moment, knowing that the experience could be quite profound for some. He was grinning as he lifted it to his nose and smelled. First time on Earth made people do strange things. Ryan lifted her boot and gave him a playful shove.
You too, Pilgrim, let's go.
Ram put the dirt in his pocket as he rose to his feet, swung his rifle from his back to his front, and fell in step with his companions, Spark leading the way and Ryan bringing up the rear. A few patches of forest clung to the ravine, reaching as far up the mountain as the climate would allow. The way was rocky and peppered with stretches of steep climbs and the occasional stream crossing. Lessa and Ram were enjoying the scenery and the sporadic monkey and bird sightings, while Nico slapped at his neck and groaned.
Oh, great! They're called mosquitoes, Ryan called ahead with a laugh. Little shits is more like it, he grumbled and slapped at his arm. Damn bugs everywhere we go.
Maybe it's just you. They're not bothering me at all, Lessa said,
commencing yet another lovely little sibling argument that lasted most of the hike. An hour passed as the climb grew steeper and the progress slower. But at least they were staying on the slopes and avoiding the higher altitudes. Ryan started to wonder if Spark knew where the hell he was going and was about to ask him when they edged around the lip of a steep rock outcrop
and then ducked beneath a wide overhang. "Lights on," Ryan said. As they moved deeper under the rock, Les angled her light above them to highlight the overhang ceiling.
"Wow, look at that!"
Dozens of ancient pictographs covered the rock, animals and hunters, hands and symbols, in clay ochre, charcoal, white. The overhang led into the mountain. The darker the passage became, the more the pictographs seemed to leap off the rock and dangle in view.
"Careful here," Spark said as he hopped down a short ledge.
They followed with caution and continued on, the cave broadening as they went, and the scent of rock and earth growing stronger. Each breath and step was amplified in the hollow space.
"Looks like no one came past this point," Lessa said. "The paintings are all gone."
Her light flashed over the rock walls.
"No, look," Nico said, shining his light on a...
"Wait, that's a Forerunner glyph." Ryan moved closer. It was hard to spot because it wasn't painted on the wall, but carved and very old, indicating it might be more ancient than anything they'd seen so far.
"Are you sure about this?" Nico asked Spark. "How do you know the librarian was here?"
It was now so dark that the hard blue light of the Armiger's body lit the confined space. As he turned toward Nico, his eyes seemed to hang there, suspended like two glowing orbs.
"She mentioned the mountain in a message to her husband."
"That's it? That's all you have to go on?"
"No."
When nothing else was forthcoming, Nico muttered.
"Well, that's reassuring."
The Armiger went forward into the shadows, this time more slowly to allow himself time to examine the walls. After a moment, he beckoned Ryan over with one hand.
"Here,"
he said, pointing at a dark area in the rock wall. Ryan used her hand to brush away the years of rock dust and grime and found an alloy panel inserted into the rock. The panel was edged with small glyphs, and in the center was the outline of a large hand.
"No question of what to do here," she said, placing her hand on the glyph.
A shudder went through her palm as a loud crack echoed through the space. The rock all around them trembled, the vibration going through the soles of Ryan's boots and wobbling her legs. Blue light appeared like a blowtorch, outlining the shape of a door. Ryan stumbled back. As the line completed its circuit, the doorway filled in with hard light. After a few moments, the light vanished, leaving behind an open space in the shape of a tall door.
"Cool," Nico murmured, heading past them toward the doorway.
Ryan grabbed his collar and jerked him back.
"Ow!"
"Carefully," she enunciated, pulling his weapon around and making him hold it.
"Carefully."
"Fine," he said. "I get it. Carefully."
The Armiger led the way in.
"Eyes open," she told the crew.
Ryan wasn't sure what they'd find next. Maybe a Forerunner facility like the one they'd seen back on Treniel. But it was simply more rock, more darkness, and more stuffy, pungent air.
"Stay against the wall," Spark told them,
just as Ryan had the distinct sensation that the entire space had suddenly opened up. Visibility was limited, but it became clear they were skirting some sort of drop-off.
"So what are we looking for?"
Ram asked, his voice echoing into the darkness.
"A sentinel," the Armiger answered.
"A what?"
The path leveled out and widened into what seemed to be a dead end.
"Armed protective drones. Two of them came to Earth in the final days, accompanying a Gargantua-class vessel."
Spark searched the wall again.
"I should know. I sent them. Three came,"
he said, glancing at them and pointing up.
"Like the three peaks of the mountain."
He smiled.
"Snow-capped sentinels."
"Two escorts and a giant ship," Ryan said thoughtfully. "Are you saying they're here under the mountains?" Spark was barely paying attention, focused on brushing off a spot on the rock wall.
"Not entirely. The Gargantua was used nearby to create the portal to the Ark. One sentinel left the planet, escorting a lifeworker's key ship and its cargo of rescued humans."
"And the other one?" Lessa asked.
"Stayed behind. Repurposed here beneath Mawenzi."
"Why this peak and not the others?" Ram asked.
"Mawenzi overlooks Voi and the portal."
"How could the librarian have survived here?" Nico asked skeptically.
"I did not say she survived here."
Ryan paused. What the hell? Wasn't that the whole reason he wanted to come to Earth in the first place? She opened her mouth to ask, but he moved and suddenly disappeared into the rock. Upon inspection, Ryan saw there was a break in the rock face. Looked at head-on, it appeared to be a flat surface. However, when seen from an angle, a tall, narrow opening revealed itself, leading to a tunnel that zigzagged back and forth, hiding the light coming from the next chamber. They emerged onto a wide ledge beneath an overhang, with some kind of light barrier in their way. A terminal was situated off to the side. Ryan stepped over to it and placed her hand on the domed pad. The barrier immediately vanished. They went slowly out onto the ledge. There was another terminal at its edge, and beyond that, a ravine. Across the ravine was a peninsula of rock, upon which a cylindrical light column emanated from a circular base. A large oblong shape hovered inside the column. Ryan could see another terminal in front of the light column, but there was no discernible way to get across the wide chasm.
That doesn't look like any drone I've ever seen, Nico said.
Because it is not. Not anymore. Its parts were used to create these structures, Spark said, moving to the terminal.
Ryan joined him. As soon as her hand touched the pad, a wide band of light shot from the ledge, straight across the divide to the other side. It's a light bridge, she said. She'd seen a few working bridges in Covenant ships, but she'd never actually walked on one.
What? Nico exclaimed. Oh, man, this is incredible!
Spark approached the light bridge, lifted a foot, and stepped off the ledge and onto the solid light. Chapter 46.
We are now free to cross the divide. I begin, but notice that one of my companions does not follow. Ah, he is leery of the hard light bridge. As I walk back, Nico heads past me with no such wariness.
Are you sure it's not going to suddenly turn off? Ram asks, taking his own tentative step, testing its validity.
I am sure, I say. Ryan slaps the Kamoyan on the back and grins widely.
Finally, something that rattles you. Glad I was here to witness the momentous event.
Like Ryan, I am amused at Ram's expense. She and Lessa pass me, but I wait for him, and we walk together to the platform. Meanwhile, I am in constant contact with my splinter. Oni's shutdown procedures were expected, and only serve to aid our non-detection as I complete my task here in the mountain. My splinter hunts for the eroded data from the expired catalog, recovered beneath the African savanna, as well as the logs of the remaining catalog's random intrusions into their network. 879 challenged me to find what I need, and so I am. The Ace of Spades crew studies the hard light column emanating from the circular base of the platform. I pause, intrigued by the wonder on their faces, the way the light reflects on their skin and brightens their eyes. Our time together is nearly at an end. I have enjoyed their different personalities and unpredictability, and I find there is hesitation in me to end our partnership. And I continue to feel guilt for the lie I have kept close at hand. Revealing to Ryan Forge that her father is dead is an uncomfortable prospect, and I do not want to be the one to deliver such news. Therefore, I have decided against it. I have no intention of fulfilling the terms of our agreement. With that dilemma out of the way, I face the column.
Is she in there?
Lessa asks.
You're a librarian?
In a manner of speaking, this is indeed where our journey ends. After accessing this last terminal, I no longer have need of you. I stare through the light at the long oval pod floating inside. This is a life worker pod, very common to the rate and familiar. It does not contain the librarian, of course, but it does contain something else. A gift, if I'm right.
Well,
Ryan is saying, and I'm brought back to the moment. They are looking at me in an encouraging manner. All I have to do once the barrier is down
is walk up the ramp and into the hard light. And yet, I hesitate. The siblings have not yet mastered the art of hiding emotion, not with any real degree of success. Ramshalva has, but in this instance, he does not bother. Ryan as well. They all appear happy. For me, I am stunned. Ryan eyes the other side of the light bridge. I also sense in her some wariness, and perhaps eagerness to be safely back on board her ship. Perhaps after all I have put them through, I owe them some degree of honesty. Fair dealings, then. I have changed my mind. She meets my gaze and lifts her hand to access the terminal, which will disengage the barrier around the light column. Quickly, I reach over and grab her wrist. "What?" she asks, alarm in her dark eyes. "What's wrong?" My timing is wretched, I am aware, but I am suddenly certain that, yes, honoring my bargain is the best possible ending. Then I may move forward into the light, free of any guilt. "There is something I must tell you." She frowns up at me, and then down at my alloy fingers. I release her. Suddenly, I am beset with indecision once more, just when I felt certain. This shift is unacceptable. I must move on. "Your father is dead," I say. "There," I said it. She blinks, then frowns deeply, stepping back as though I have physically struck her. Then she simply stares at me. There is no reaction at all. The crew looks at each other, stunned and confused. I grow uncomfortable in the silence. He never survived Etrin Harbridge.
Chapter 47.
There had to be someone to stay behind and detonate the fusion reactor. He sacrificed his life.
Spark continued to talk, to explain, but Ryan couldn't hear anything more through the rush of anguish barreling through her veins. Her mind floundered, congesting with denial.
"What is this?" she finally managed, her tone brittle as she gave a sharp, ridiculous laugh, blinking away the stinging in her eyes and glancing at Spark and the crew, trying to find an anchor, a rescue from the unreal.
"No, no,"
she shook her head.
"What is this? Why are you saying this?"
"This isn't real. This had to be some twisted AI version of a joke. Your father is dead. There had to be someone to detonate the fusion reactor. There had to be someone to stay behind. He sacrificed his life." Pieces spun through her memory. Little bits narrative, the video file, the debris field, all fragments and parts of a larger whole, all talking at once, all fitting into a horrific puzzle. Her father, he wouldn't have stayed behind. But he would. Absolutely. He'd be the first to volunteer if the stakes were high enough. And back then, at the very beginning of the invasion, they sure as hell were. Blowing up the shield world to prevent the Covenant from getting their hands on an entire Forerunner fleet was exactly the sort of thing John Forge would do. A hand landed on her shoulder, and she jumped, backing away. Voices began filtering through her shock. The crew, Spark.
"I am very sorry to deliver such bad news, Ryan," Spark said, sounding worried and confused, and even apologetic.
Her brow went high.
"You're sorry?"
Shock, grief, and rage filled her up, swift and vicious and consuming, pushing at her insides into tiny crevices and corners and cells until she wanted to scream, to break into a million pieces under the pressure. She lunged at the armiger, shoving his chest plate as hard as she could, letting out a guttural cry. He could have crushed her in an instant, but stumbled away instead, as if he were much more frail.
"You're sorry? You didn't just figure this out now. How long? How long have you known?"
"I have known nearly the entire time."
Ryan lost it then, hitting and screaming at the armiger as he continued to back up, refusing to engage in a fight as she bruised and bloodied her knuckles on his impervious alloy, pounding on him, swiping at his legs, toppling him, until she found herself on the ground,
the armature behind her, finally holding her still in a chokehold. But she wasn't done. As soon as she was down, instinct had her drawing her handgun and shoving it under the armature's jaw. Her breathing was ragged and harsh, her rage a slow burn now, and the present situation re-emerging, whether she wanted it to or not. Her bleary gaze found Spark's avatar standing on the terminal, watching her in consternation, the lines in his face somehow more humanoid than ever.
"Fire your weapon, and the bullet will most likely ricochet into your skull," he said calmly.
"Of course it would." Ryan dropped the gun, her arm going limp. Her face was wet, and she was wheezing from the chokehold.
"You do realize you cannot overpower me. I could kill you without any effort at all," Spark's avatar added.
She leveled a murderous glare his way. "You already have." Lissa put her hand to her mouth at that, tears streaming down her face. Spark let out a heavy sigh, his demeanor full of regret.
"I realize how you feel, but..."
"You have no idea what this feels like," she said, seething, as hot tears reformed in her eyes and she struggled to be free of him. The avatar stiffened, his blue light turning crimson, the lines in his face carving it into anger.
"I have no idea. Me?"
He disappeared as the armature released her, shoving her forward. She rolled onto her hands and knees, gasping, tears splattering on the ground. The crew had had enough, and they made moves to intervene, but Ryan held up a hand and pushed to her feet. The armature straightened to its full height, a subtle reshape into something more threatening. It stepped closer and leaned forward, pulsing red and menacing, looking her dead in the eye.
"I have no idea," it shouted.
Somewhere in the back of her mind, her inner voice made a sound of warning, but she shut it down and shoved the armature's chestplate with both hands. "Yeah," she replied. "That's exactly what I'm saying." Because she couldn't fold right now, couldn't take the knowing. The truth was too harsh, too real, too searing. She'd rather bleed and fight. She screamed and pushed at him again, then went to strike. But he'd finally had enough and grabbed her wrist tightly.
"How dare you? You are a speck of dust. A child. One who knows nothing. Imagine a life where everyone you know is gone."
He stepped closer, and she moved back. But he kept on coming, squeezing her wrist harder and harder.
"Entire race is gone. Entire planet's gone. But that is not enough, no," he continued. "Even your own body is taken from you while you are conscious of it happening. Your entire civilization is wiped out, and you helped initiate the process. Imagine being the only one left."
His voice broke at that.
"The only one left for 100,000 years, and when you finally wake up..."
He couldn't go on. He was overwhelmed with emotion, his voice cracking as though he wept. The armature pinched his fingers together and held them to her face.
"Your grief is a mote," he said with anger. "A tiny grain of sand in an ocean the size of the universe."
He paused.
"I did not kill your father, Captain. He chose his own destiny. He had the courage to do what needed to be done."
He leaned forward, his face close to hers, his voice low.
"Cry to me after you witness all sentient life in the entire galaxy erased with barely a whisper. Dare face me then and say I know nothing of grief."
They stared at each other, lost in their own anguish, each blaming the other. Ryan jerked her wrist away from him, and he let her go, his red light returning to blue. She rubbed her wrist and then wiped her arm across her wet face. "I'm done being led around by the nose." She went to the terminal and slapped her hand onto the dome. "We're finished here." The translucent barrier fell, and the light column seemed to grow a bit brighter with it gone. Ryan turned away. No sooner had she set one foot on the bridge to leave than a flurry of light across the divide stopped her. The ledge there was filled with armed soldiers, weapons drawn. She recognized Agent Han, and near him a very tall Spartan in full Mjolnir armor, directing two other Spartans along the ledge. No need for the big guy to take off his helmet. Ryan knew exactly who it was. Another squad appeared, in all-black special ops combat gear. She counted 10 altogether. Ryan spun, a cold bitterness settling into her bones. "Cut the bridge," she demanded. Spark disabled the light bridge. Then he faced her, hesitating a long moment before saying,
"Goodbye, Captain."
He turned and walked directly into the column, swallowed up by light until not even a shadow of him remained. He'd simply left, abandoned them. Spark had bowed out as they faced an enemy they couldn't possibly defeat, at least not here, not trapped as they were. Ryan couldn't process it fully. There were too many emotions clogging her brain. Options weren't coming. As hard as she might try, there didn't seem to be a way through. The crew, they'd counted on her and... "Ryan." It was Nico. He was in front of her now, looking as stricken and shocked by Spark's revelation and affection as she was. But he grabbed her shoulders and looked at her head on until she focused on him.
Hey, put it in a box, he said softly. Remember what you told me? Lock it behind a wall, keep it contained. And then,
he glanced across the divide and back at her.
When we need it, you let it out like a goddamn storm. Remember?
Tears swam in his young eyes. Here was someone who'd believed in her, relied upon her, cared about her. Had she not been emotionally spent, she would have dropped to her knees and let it all out. But instead, she found herself hardening inside, finding some inner reserve. She thought of Cade and how she would never get over that loss. But there was a way, always a way, to keep on, to move forward. She could do so again. And she, they, would all get through this. Slowly, she began to nod, letting Nico's words wash over her, giving her strength. He gave her a sad, lopsided smile.
So, Cap, what do we do now? Last stand?
She drew in a deep breath and noted two of the special ops soldiers were working on the terminal from their end.
They are trying to get the bridge back online. Let's look around and see if we can find another way out of here.
What about following Spark?
Lessa said, gesturing to the hard light column. We have no idea where he disappeared to. And I don't know about you, but I'm tired of following that asshole into the unknown.
Ram, you go left. Nico, right. Follow that platform around and see where it leads.
While the ace crew were armed and held their rifles at the ready, they hadn't taken aim, and they didn't plan to. Ryan and Lessa stood at the terminal and watched the progress across the divide. If that light bridge engaged...
Captain Forge!
The big guy's voice resonated in the cavern.
There's nowhere for you to go. It's over. Put your weapons down, and we'll figure this out.
Yeah, no thanks, Ryan shouted back. I know what you guys do to people like us. I don't figure on disappearing anytime soon.
No one's disappearing, the Spartan said.
Can you give me your word on that?
He hesitated, because of course he couldn't vouch for Oni. He wasn't the one in charge. And Oni had a knack for hiding prisoners away without any regard to the legal system or individual rights.
Captain, Agent Han called. All we want is the armature and the monitor. Hand them over and I'll guarantee you and your crew walk away from this.
Lessa leaned closer to Ryan, frowning.
As if we could control Spark.
Sir,
one of the soldiers working on the terminal said.
Lightbridge is coming online.
Chapter 48.
I pass through the column's blinding light and into a haze of white. I see nothing at first, and then a lithe figure emerges out of the ether, and I know it is her, the librarian. I feel the technology that allows her to awaken and form. Her essence strengthens and floats closer to me, and I see her clearly, unchanged. The epitome of grace and beauty and intelligence. She wears a flowing dress and headpiece and a heavy aura of responsibility. Her large dark eyes regard me with love and friendship, sadness and regret. She is the same who blessed me as an infant, the same who appeared to me in my child's mind, serene and loving. She is as I have always seen her, goddess, mother. Manipulator, Savior. Her examination sweeps through me with such gravitas and power. Suddenly, I am pulled from my armature body, becoming visibly more solid until once more I am Chaikus. But I know this is simply her doing, making us equals, making us memories of flesh and bone.
Chaikus,
she says with all the affection of a mother welcoming home a long-lost son.
Somehow you have always managed to find a way and serve me well.
And I have always managed to pay a price. I do not mean for our greeting to begin with contention. The words came out before I could stop them. But they are true, so I lift my chin and claim them. Her head tilts.
Have I hurt you so?
She asks, her expression softening with sorrow and regret. Yes, I cry inside. She nods gravely.
For that, I am saddened. Regrets are all that is left, it seems.
Her anguish should fill me with satisfaction, but because I love her, it does nothing but make me hurt more.
You have persisted, she says with pride. Adapted. You are a singular marvel.
Of your design, I must know. Did she mean for this to happen? She set so many eventualities in motion, and I must know if I am one of them. She shakes her head.
No. Your evolution now is your own, a product of necessity, perhaps, one that might have a great impact on things to come. Sometimes.
Her dark eyes show a flash of mirth.
Sometimes the universe creates what it needs without the machinations of others.
I do not understand.
No, you do not. But one day you will. You are a creature of choice now, without my sway or influence. Will you serve the mantle?
The mantle was yours. It was never mine.
No, it was yours. Meant for your kind, not forerunners. And look at us now.
She gazes at me with such remorse.
Champions of the mantle are so few, and there's still so much to do. At Requiem, I was awoken, along with my husband.
I recoil. The Didact is alive. The catalog claimed as much as well, I remember. Her expression grows forlorn, and she sighs. She does not answer, but it is clear his threat is not worrisome.
I have seen the progress of humanity's advancement, she says. I have seen the paths they might take, and the darkness that is coming from many sides. I have given mankind the means and the impetus, and I will give them all that is mine to give. Perhaps this time they will achieve what we could not.
Her lips turn up slightly at the corners.
They do not have us forerunners standing in their way.
There is so much I have wanted to say to her over the millennia. So many questions, so many accusations, so many conversations, and now I cannot find the words. I do not care about your war and your mantle, I say.
But then, you do. One side cares, the other does not. One is cold and scheming, the other is all heart.
I have no heart. That too was taken from me. I have paid my price, done what was required of me. My friends, I manage. Riser, Renevra. She studies me for a long moment.
As a human, you carried the essence of Forthencho, Lord of Admirals, within you. You felt his struggle, his torment and despair. You were his prison, and you knew how it felt to lose yourself to his strong presence. Would you do such a thing to another? Raise old friends who are at peace? Conscript other humans to carry them?
You did the same. To me.
For the greater good.
The greater good is merely an excuse for the strong to make decisions for the weak. She doesn't answer me. She sees that this is an argument neither one of us will win. My ire deflates. Are they? I question her words. At peace.
They were left to live out their lives in peace, their gene song quiet.
They are remembered in the domain. Send me there. Give me access so that my memory may join them. I am pleading. The words coming out of me are crushing. I will give up everything to be among them.
They are only echoes now, Chaikus,
she tells me.
Experience remembered through the eyes of my kind. Nothing more. You are not meant to relive the past, to dwell in the halls of living memory.
She shakes her head.
Where you wish to go, the bad lives alongside the good.
I do not know how to respond to this. I am confused, and after all this time, no longer know what I want. She is correct. I already know this. Is there no hope? I find myself beginning to panic. Then join me, I offer. You can walk, as I do, among humans again. It is a small thing for her to use an armature in the same manner I have done. She shakes her head.
It is not my time.
Then I will join you.
Dear Chaikus, I see the burden of loneliness you've carried these long millennia. Had you not been a monitor, the weight of it would have crushed you long ago. Do not let it do so now. You must do the difficult thing and let it go. Perhaps the friends you seek, you have already found.
The haze clears, and I can see the Ace of Spades crew trapped. They will not escape the chamber. In nanoseconds, I replay our time together, every word spoken, every word unsaid, our trials and our journey, our trust and mistrust, our disagreements and laughter. Of all the sentient life I could have encountered, I encountered them, so suited to my needs and so familiar. I feel panic again. I do not want to lose the librarian. And you, what will you do now?
This imprint will join the others already gone to the absolute record. Humanity must be given the tools to hold the mantle of responsibility. And the knowledge. They must have the knowledge to tend the domain.
She stares off into nothing for some time before gracing me with a soft look.
Then, perhaps...
Bastion, I ask. Her tender smile fills me with love and finality, and I see that she does not believe she will ever make it there, or perhaps anywhere she might recover and rest, and find peace at last.
Perhaps, she answers, with a little luck.
If I had a heart, it would be breaking. I feel no luck, but the absence of it a heavy doom and despair. Already I am letting go. Luck is your way, I remind her.
No, dear Chaikus. Spark, it is yours.
She gazes at the crew through the thinning of the light.
And theirs. It always has been. Don't you see? You may leave with me to the absolute record, or you may choose a different path. The choice is yours, my old friend.
A small etched box appears and she hands it to me. What is this?
A key. Find what's missing,
she says.
Fix the path. Right what my kind has turned wrong.
I frown.
Or come with me.
Time is standing still. I commit this moment to memory, every detail. I want to ask her what it is that she wants, not what she hopes to achieve, or the responsibilities she has taken upon her shoulders, but her own desire, her heart's wanting. But I realize I do not have to ask this. I already know. Can the Didact find peace? The sorrow that flashes through her eyes instantly pains me.
I fear my husband is beyond redemption.
She shifts her emotions.
You have made your choice, then.
I look back and see the light bridge has been reactivated, and Spartans are advancing, weapons drawn. I turn back to the librarian. She is waiting for my decision. I have waited 100,000 years to find my friends. Why would I leave when I have found them?
The librarian's mouth stretches, and her eyes crinkle at the corners. She looks upon me with so much love and pride. She knows I will do the right thing. She trusts in me. May I also find the same trust in myself?
We will meet again, old friend.
Yes, I know we will.
Chapter 49. Nico and Ram returned from inspecting the circular platform with the bad news.
There is nothing back there, just rock wall, Ram said.
We're trapped, Nico said as the hard light bridge suddenly flared to life and streamed across the divide.
He ran to the terminal but was afraid to touch anything.
How do I turn it off?
The Spartans were preparing to cross the bridge, going slowly in formation. Ryan silently cursed Spark for deserting them. That dread she'd been feeling earlier, maybe she should have listened to her gut.
Captain Forge, lay down your weapons, now,
the big guy called as he and his team eased their way across the bridge.
What do we do? Lessa asked.
Well, what we're not going to do is fire on a bunch of Spartans. Keep your weapons down and your hands in the air.
The fear she saw in their young eyes killed her.
Well, I would say it was nice crewing with you, Ram said. But...
They watched the Spartans advance, keeping very still, knowing that if they made the slightest move, they could be fired upon.
How the hell did they find us? Nico asked.
Lessa stared into the depths of the chasm.
I think I'd rather jump than be taken prisoner.
Don't you even think about it, Ryan said. We'll find a way out. We always do.
Yeah, well, our luck might have just
Nico said. A bright white flash filled the cavern. The Spartans froze. Ryan shielded her eyes, looking up along with everyone else. The light filled the entire space and seemed to go right through her. She felt it, a low vibration easing through her skin and muscle and bone, buzzing and energizing. Images filled her mind, too quick to capture and hold. Melody and song, memories, words. As the light faded, the room spun. Vertigo and emotion gripped her. She blinked hard, trying to ground herself and noticing those around her were similarly affected. But there wasn't time to figure out what the hell had just happened, because suddenly the hard light column behind them began to glow brighter. Particles of color ran through the light in small vertical lines, streaming like code, growing faster and brighter and more vivid until the pod inside shot like a bullet up through the column and disappeared. Ryan turned away from the sight, blinking her eyes back to normal, only to see the Spartans and special ops soldiers suddenly dropping to their knees and aiming their weapons, a multitude of voices shouting at them to stand down. Stunned, Ryan's hands shot higher into the air. Her crew did the same.
Hold your fire, howlers! Do not fire! The big guy yelled at the same time.
Heart racing and fear sliding down into her gut, Ryan wasn't sure what the hell was happening. They'd made no threatening overtures, and she had a hard time following the shouting and mixed commands from across the divide.
Do not fire!
The big guy hollered again.
Hands behind your head! Another shouted. Get on your knees! Now!
Ryan linked her fingers behind her head, and as she went to bend her knees, she caught movement and glanced behind her. Understanding dawned. The armiger was standing on the platform, holding a small metal object and carrying himself in battle stance, glowing a menacing, highly aggressive red.
Oh, God. No, no, don't shoot! She yelled desperately at the Spartans.
Jesus, they were right in the middle of what could very well be a massacre. The crew looked frantic and scared, everyone with their hands behind their heads, as the armiger took a few steps forward to stand in their midst, between Lessa and Nico. He crouched and let out a challenging roar. Goosebumps raced up Ryan's arms. While he was ready to fight alongside them, to protect them, Spark had the worst timing of any being Ryan had ever known, and he was about to get them all killed. Her fears were justified when he did something even worse to inflame an already explosive situation. He manifested a hard light rifle. The special ops team ignored the big guy's order and opened fire. Ryan was in a slow-motion nightmare. She grabbed the nearest person, Lessa, and threw her toward the terminal. As she turned around again, she saw Ram and Nico scrambling behind the terminal for cover. Ryan dove for it,
feeling a sting in her left bicep as a bullet tore through skin and muscle. They huddled tightly behind the small bit of cover they had.
"Everybody okay?" she shouted.
Les and Nico were pale, their eyes wide as plates. Ram gave her a nod.
"We're fine. Are you okay?" he asked,
eyeing the blood spilling down her arm.
"Hurts like hell, but I've had worse. I'm good. Worry about it later."
A flash of understanding and admiration crossed his features. He'd been there too, plenty of times in their line of work. He returned her nod, and then saw that his cigarette had fallen out of his pocket at the corner of the terminal. With a curse, he sneaked his hand out to retrieve it as several shots screamed overhead. Ryan glanced around the terminal and saw the Armiger aiming his light rifle, not at the Spartans, but up at the wide, rocky overhang. Several shots made the entire overhang splinter and come tumbling down. The soldiers retreated across the bridge before they were caught in the avalanche of rock that quickly covered the bridge. The firefight was over. Spark hadn't been trying to kill them. If he'd wanted to, all he had to do was disengage the light bridge while it was still occupied. Now that it wasn't, he accessed the terminal and deactivated the light bridge, the fallen rocks immediately tumbling into the chasm. He smashed the panel in an effort to prevent the bridge from being accessed again, before walking around the terminal to face them. His alloy steps echoed in the quiet. He stood above them and then bent down, red, glowing eyes slowly shifting to blue.
"Follow me," he said, holding out his hand.
At first, no one moved. Then Lessa slapped her hand into his.
"Don't have to ask me twice."
He pulled her up and the rest followed. Once they were all standing, Spark ushered them onto the platform where the light column had been. The column was gone, but the platform was still glowing like one of the translocation pad, Ryan realized, right before they blinked out of existence, and then reappeared outside in the thin air and barren landscape just beneath the summit of Mawenzi's jagged peaks. Sickness rolled through Ryan's gut as they stumbled, finding nearby boulders to hold onto, needing something solid to ground them. Lessa went behind one of the rocks and puked, while Nico sat down in the dirt, dazed. And Ram just stood there, with Spark, as if nothing had happened. Again.
"Can't breathe," Nico said.
"It's the altitude," Ram told him.
"It's going to take us hours to get back to the ship," Ryan said.
They were so high up, all she could see were clouds. She swallowed down her nausea, then checked her left bicep. A nice chunk of skin and muscle had been sliced in two. She was lucky it was just a flesh wound. It ached and burned, but it would heal.
"Whoa, you're shot?"
Nico's brow arched high.
"Save your breath," Ryan told him. "I'm fine."
"Less!" Nico scurried to his sister. He just noticed the blood trickling from a cut over her eyebrow.
"It's fine," she said, wiping her mouth. "Hit my damn head on the terminal."
She sat on a rock and he knelt in front of her, worry etched on his dirty face. Lessa waved his concern away, and then she glanced over at Spark. While he'd returned to his normal blue color, he was still armed, scanning the horizon for signs of danger.
"You came back for us," she said.
No one said anything. Yes, he'd returned and saved them all, but that didn't negate the fact that he'd left in the first place and nearly got them all killed. It wouldn't take long for the Spartans to escape the cavern, and Ryan was pretty sure they'd called in reinforcements way before the ceiling even came crashing down. In fact, considering where they were, the entire mountain would be crawling with military any time now. She let out a long, frustrated breath.
"Now what? How the hell are we going to get back to the ship without being spotted?"
"I can remotely access the ship," Spark revealed. "It will come to you."
"She," Ryan corrected.
Spark stared at her for a long time, and she thought she might have to explain herself, but he just nodded and said,
"She."
Guys?
Nico was standing and looking across the clouds to three dark specks moving fast.
"We've got drones incoming."
The Armiger quickly joined them, and they were immediately engulfed in a translucent hard light dome just before the drones soared overhead and then made several passes around the summit. Ryan held her weapon tightly, looking up through the haze of light and hoping they wouldn't be caught. In the quiet seconds that passed, her thoughts turned to her father. No, not yet. She couldn't go there. not until they were off this mountain and safe again. The drones made one more pass before zipping down the slopes. The dome dissipated.
"We are undetected," Spark announced.
"That comes in handy," Nico quipped. "We wouldn't need his help right now if he hadn't betrayed us," Ryan said.
"I did not betray you."
She gave the Armiger a hard stare.
"Very well. Yes, I did betray you. But I had my reasons. And then I changed my mind."
She rolled her eyes, trying not to let the altitude get to her. "Lucky us." True to Spark's word, the Ace of Spades arrived shortly after the drones disappeared, settling nearby on a craggy slope. The crew gathered and waited for the ramp to descend, the wind buffeting them as the thruster's force pushed against solid rock. Ryan watched Nico and Lessa board, followed by the Armiger. Ram paused next to her, clapping her on her good shoulder and giving her an understanding look.
"One foot in front of the other, Forge."
As soon as they were on board, the ship lifted off the mountainside without Ryan's input. It should have stirred something in her. She should have cared where they were going, but she felt nothing. She headed to the locker room with the others. Taking a seat, she studied the crew. They were banged up, bruised, dirty, and looked completely exhausted. Nico shrugged out of his gear, then went to the medkit for antiseptic spray to treat the cut over Les's eyebrow. He wiped it carefully and then applied a seal. Ram ducked out of his rifle strap, placed the weapon on the floor, sat on the bench, and at long last lit his cigarette. He took a long drag and let his head rest against the wall, eyes closing.
"Ryan."
Nico was standing in front of her with the medkit, gesturing to her arm. She removed her gear slowly, starting to feel the pain and heat in her left arm, her muscles and her bruised knuckles. Her shoulder injury from Binturl burned with pain. Everything hurt. Nico cleaned her wound and then sealed it.
"Thanks," she said.
After storing their gear, he and Lessa retreated into the hold and up the steps. Ram stayed put, enjoying his smoke. As Ryan left the locker room, she passed a systems panel. She could have checked it to see if there was a destination, a road to anywhere, but it was clear that Spark would take them somewhere safe or dangerous, or really wherever the hell he saw fit. She was honestly too drained to care. Chapter 50. Facility at Voi, Kenya, Africa, Earth. Annabelle was working with two groups of officers and a ground crew, one group trying to get into the comm tower, and the other through the blast doors in Hangar 2. Hangar 1's doors were still closed tight, but there was a pelican-sized hole in the side of the hangar, where the AR team and fire team Apollo had blown their way out. As Thea had been about to turn herself in for review, the AI had detected a strange signal coming from Kilimanjaro, a possible ship signature that identified as both Forerunner and human. It was like nothing she'd ever encountered before. She'd sent a quick message to Hollier, seconds before the facility completely shut down. Once Fireteam Apollo and the AR team were free from the hangar, and Annabelle had been informed of the signal, she'd ordered both teams to gear up and track it down, knowing it had to be the Ace of Spades, and potentially 343 Guilty Spark. The coincidence was too great to ignore. If they could neutralize the monitor, his hold on the facility would be nullified, and whatever the hell he had planned would be cut short. An hour had passed since both teams left the facility for Mount Kilimanjaro. There was no way to know their status until the blackout was lifted. The teams were on their own. Dr. Iqbal arrived with his own science team in tow.
"Is it true?" he asked in a low voice for her ears only. "Is he here? Guilty Spark?"
"I believe so. He's commandeered an Armiger."
"Good Lord, are you sure?"
Annabelle stepped away from the others as they continued trying to release the hangar lock. She glanced at the mountain.
"They're snow-capped sentinels," she murmured.
"What?"
"He's looking for her, for the librarian, just like the stat bots predicted."
As they stared at the mountain, a bright column of light streamed from the summit, shooting into the sky and painting the clouds in a rainbow of colors as it went.
"What the hell was that?" Iqbal said.
Annabelle shook her head. Whatever was going on in that mountain, she prayed her team finally lived up to their reputations. She turned to the doctor.
What do you know about manual lock overrides?
Why?
We need to get into the comm tower to reestablish communications, and the techs with the know-how aren't out here.
Which means they're trapped below.